On Sunday mornings, we've been looking at the work of the Holy Spirit. A little break from that this morning. Now, what is Jesus like? Well, listen to how he describes himself. Matthew 11, verse 28. He says, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." He says, "For I am gentle and lowly in heart." Sinclair Ferguson says, "Gentleness is virtually the only personal quality about himself to which Jesus draws specific attention." It's interesting, isn't it? He could have said, "For I am kind, for I am faithful, for I am holy." But he didn't. "For I am gentle and lowly," or humble, "in heart." So we're going to think about the gentleness of Jesus. We have three things to say. And the first is this: a problem. Now, the Jews were expecting the Messiah, the promised one, the coming one. And whilst they disagreed over many things about the coming one, they were agreed on this: that when Messiah comes, the whole world will know. He'll be a great warrior Messiah who will destroy his enemies. He'll judge the nations. He'll punish the wicked. He'll banish death. He'll sweep away the curse. It'll be the end of the age. It'll be the beginning of a new age, a golden age of blessing and joy. The reign of God begun upon the earth. So they agree that the Messiah's intervention would be dramatic, explosive, cosmic. So when they looked at the carpenter from Nazareth, well, how can he be the Messiah? Where's the kingdom? Where's the power? Where's the glory? And you get a flavour of it in chapter 12 of Matthew. As we read, Jesus heals this man on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees are incensed. So 12 verse 14, "Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him, how they might destroy him. But when Jesus knew it, he withdrew from there." And you can hear the wheels going round in the Jewish mind. What sort of Messiah is he? His enemies plot to destroy him. What, does he destroy them? No, he runs away. What sort of Messiah is that? And it goes on, doesn't it? Verse 15, "And a great multitudes or great crowds followed him, and he healed them all. Yet he warned them not to make him known." Again, how can he be Messiah? Here's this alleged display of power. All these people are healed. But what happens next? He says, "Don't tell anyone it was me." Who ever heard of a Messiah hushing up his identity? The secret Messiah. It's absurd. But is it, says Matthew? Isn't this the Christ the scriptures predicted? Isn't this the one we're told to expect? "Yet he warned them not to make him known, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet." And then he goes on to quote Isaiah in verse 18. "The Lord is speaking. He's speaking of his son. He's speaking of the servant king. Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved, in whom my soul is well pleased." Don't expect his coming to be accompanied by fire and judgment. "Behold my servant." He's come to serve. He's come to get his hands wet and dirty, washing the feet of others. "I will put my spirit upon him." So look at him, you'll see what a spirit-filled life looks like. And he'll be filled with the Spirit beyond measure. He's the anointed one. He's Messiah. And he will declare justice to the Gentiles, or justice to the nations. Not judgment, but justice. He's come to put things right. And we instinctively understand that, don't we? Whether we're a Christian or not a Christian this morning. We all know something's wrong with the world. It needs fixing. I need fixing. Life's full of disappointments. We all have a sense that life is supposed to be different from this. Why do we watch films with happy endings? And actually, we don't just watch films with happy endings. We wish we were in those films, don't we? I wish I could be there. I wish that was me. We all want a happy ending. Because something's not right. Well, Messiah has come to put things right. If the world's in a mess, if I'm in a mess, Jesus is the remedy. But this prophecy of Isaiah says that he'll go about the work in a way that we don't expect. Look at verse 19. He will not quarrel, nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. So he won't be shouting orders, because he's come to serve. He won't throw his weight around, because he's gentle and lowly in heart. He won't shout you down. He's approachable. He will not quarrel. He won't cry out. He won't shout. Nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. He's not argumentative. He's not contentious. He's not censorious. Doesn't knock you down. Doesn't trash you behind your back. Doesn't kick you in your shins. You know, you speak to some people, don't you? And they give you a good kicking in the shins verbally. And then when you go, ow, they get all surprised. Well, he won't kick you in the shins. He's friendly, gentle, winsome. He's the very opposite of a religious nutter. Verse 20, a bruised reed he will not break, and a smoking flax he will not quench. Think of a reed. It quivers, doesn't it, in the lightest of breezes. It can just about support the weight of a sparrow. But a bruised reed, a broken reed. But then we're all bruised reeds, aren't we? We all need, really, deep down, gentle handling. And we're safe in the hands of Jesus. A bruised reed he will not break. And a smoking flax he will not quench. Smoking flax, a smouldering wick. The fire has all but gone out. There's no flame, it's just smoke. If you blow on it too hard to bring it to a flame, you might blow it out. Has your light gone out? A smoking flax, he will not quench. And this is the Messiah he will be, verse 20, until he sends forth justice to victory. This is the Messiah he's going to be, gentle, lowly in heart. Bruised reeds are safe with him. Smoking flaxes are safe with him. That's the Messiah he will be until he puts the universe right. Until the consummation of the kingdom. The end of the age. Yes, the day is coming when he will destroy death and banish the curse and judge the world and put down all rebellion. The day is coming when he will make all things new. And he will establish the reign of God over a redeemed universe forever. And on that day, every knee will bow. And every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And the earth, as Habakkuk says, will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. The day is coming when it will be dramatic, explosive, cosmic. Till he sends forth justice to victory. But until that day, this is the Messiah the people in their millions from across the nations are going to come to love and to trust. Verse 21, and in his name, Gentiles will trust. So do you see how Matthew answers the Jews? He says to them, this is exactly the Messiah you should be expecting. In a world of broken lives, labouring under the curse, burdened down with guilt and sin and disappointment, sadness, this is exactly the Messiah that we need, that I need. Gentle and lowly, humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Last Sunday evening we were at Gunsbury Baptist, and Paul Levy was preaching, and he was joined on the platform by a cat. He made a quip and said, it's good to see Lewis Allen is back with us. But it was a cat. It was a lovely, fluffy pussy cat. And there it was, sort of padding silently round the platform, you know, the with its tail in the air. And it was the caretaker's cat, somehow found his way in. And the cat then proceeded to stroll around the congregation, looking for affection. I mean, it must have been hopeless for Levy as he was preaching, because obviously there you are preaching, saying serious things, and you can see all these faces lighting up and people inviting the cat in their direction. And there he was, looking for someone to show him some affection, tickle his tummy. He was a friendly cat. A gentle cat. Was that the gentleness that Matthew speaks of here? Is Jesus, as it were, just a pussy cat? Gentle Jesus, meek and mild. Well, if that's the gentleness that Matthew is speaking of, then it's no big deal, is it, that Jesus is gentle? But if last Sunday a huge lion had wandered in, majestic, awesome, powerful, with a glorious golden mane, if a lion had come to occupy the platform, how then would we have felt? Would we have felt at ease and safe? Would we have thought, oh, I'm going to go up to that lion and I'm going to stroke him? Would you want to, as the lion looks round the congregation, would you want to catch the lion's gaze, or would you keep your head down? The last thing I want to do is attract his attention. The last thing I want to do is say, come over here, come to me. A lion. Well, Jesus is a lion, not a pussycat. He's the lion of the tribe of Judah. And he's not a tame lion. He's the eternal Son, the sovereign God. He is awesome and transcendent and glorious. When he comes into this world, he comes as a lion. But he hasn't come to tear us apart. He hasn't come to rip us to shreds and devour us. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. This is the humble God, the servant king, who turns his gaze upon us and says, don't be afraid. Don't run and hide. Come to me. You are guilty. You are overawed in my presence. You are worthy of death. But if you come to me, you'll find the touching point is my gentleness. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Well, point number two is, look at some examples of the gentleness of Jesus. And just turn back a couple of pages to chapter 8. Here's a man who's riddled with leprosy. And lepers are unwanted, they're unclean, and they're untouched. He's a bruised reed, isn't he? A smoking flax. And yet we read chapter 8, verse 2, behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. And you think, was there anyone less fit to approach a king? And then, as we said many times before, as you've come to this passage in past, Jesus does the unthinkable, doesn't he? Look at verse 3. Then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. Immediately his leprosy was cleansed. Jesus touched him. Why would anyone touch a leper? Why not heal him at arm's length? Why would anyone touch a leper? Well, that's exactly the point, isn't it? No one ever touched a leper. When was the last time anyone had stretched out a friendly, kind hand towards this leper? It might have been 20 years since somebody, actually, who wasn't a leper himself, had actually stretched out a hand to touch him. And in that touch, Jesus is conveying to him in a way that words cannot, just how willing I am to help you. You ask me, am I willing? Well, I can tell you I'm willing. But I'm going to put my hand on you so that you feel and know. So as you feel the heat of my hand, you know how willing I am to make you whole. For I'm gentle and lowly in heart. Come with me now to Mark chapter 7. Mark 7 and verse 32. And they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech. And they begged him to put his hand on him. They took him aside from the multitude, from the crowd, and put his fingers in his ears and spat and touched his tongue. Then looking up to heaven, he sighed and said, Ephphatha, that is, be opened. Immediately his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that beautiful? Can you see the scene? This man can't hear, he's deaf. He can barely speak. His friends bring him to Jesus. They say, please can you help? Please do something for him. And they place him in Jesus' hands. And what does Jesus do? Well, the first thing he does is take him to a quiet place. Why take him to a quiet place? Well, he's deaf, isn't he? Even we who have ears are alarmed by loud noises, aren't we? Remember, he's going to hear now for the first time. If he's in a loud, crowded place, the noises are going to frighten him. They're going to threaten him. He's going to be overwhelmed by the experience. So Jesus understands that. So they go to a quiet place. And of course he can't hear, so Jesus speaks to him in sign language. Puts his fingers in the man's ears. I'm going to open them. He spits maybe on his finger and then touches his tongue. I'm going to loose your tongue. And then looking up to heaven, God is going to heal you. He says to him, be opened. And immediately his ears are opened, the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. No wonder they say in verse 37, he has done all things well. But it's that little phrase in verse 34 that we need to look at, isn't it? Verse 34, then looking up to heaven, he sighed. Jesus sighs. The man is watching him. The man can't hear. This is sign language. Jesus sighs. Some translations have it, he sighs deeply. So what's the message? Jesus is saying to him, I know. I'm so sorry. I understand. I understand what you've been going through all the years. I understand what you've had to put up with. He sighed, and we see the heart of God, don't we, laid bare. And here's this man, he's a bruised reed, he's a smoking flax. But he's safe in the hands of Jesus. Because he's gentle and lowly in heart. And then Matthew 21. We've been here before. There's some passages you've got to go back to again and again, haven't you? Jesus rides into Jerusalem. Or does he come in a chariot? Is he the great imperial Christ? You know, you go to some sort of cathedrals and you see the tapestries and the stained glass windows and there's a great imperial Christ. Is that who he is? Or does he come on a war horse? Come to execute vengeance on his enemies? No, he rides on a donkey. 21 verse 4. And all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, tell the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, lowly or humble, and sitting on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. At the Battle of Waterloo, the French cavalry charged the British infantry squares. And they sent in the light cavalry at first, about 4,500 light cavalry. They got beaten back. And then they sent in the heavy cavalry, 9,000 heavy cavalry charging the British squares. It must have been terrifying. If you've seen the film The Return of the King, and there's that scene, isn't there, where the Rohirrim, they charge the orcs as they're sort of... you know what I mean, you've seen it. They're charging the orcs, aren't they? And it's all CGI, so there's probably only about 10 horses there, but CGI. And it fills the screen. Well, somebody, I don't know, somebody's counted how many horses there were filling the screen. See, this tremendous charge. Well, that's 6,000 horses. 6,000 horses at the Return of the King. And you think, oh, look at how many there are. Here were 9,000. 1.5 times that size. Heavy cavalry charging at the British squares. Must have been terrifying. If they come riding on donkeys, it's not very scary, is it? If they've been riding on little donkeys, the foal of a donkey, well, they would have just laughed, wouldn't they? It's ridiculous. Children ride on donkeys. There's nothing threatening about a donkey. Tell the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, lowly, and sitting on a donkey, a colt, the foal of a donkey. The king who rides on a donkey. He's gentle, humble, approachable. Even a child can come to him. And here is Jesus dying on a cross. And blood is flowing from his head, his back, his hands, his feet. And the drops of his agony are being witnessed by a smoking flax. There's a dying thief. The light has all but gone out. This man's only got hours to live. And in everyone else's eyes, he's criminal scum who can go to hell. But the dying thief reads the inscription, doesn't he? Above Jesus. This is the King of the Jews. And he sees something in this King that he's never seen anywhere before or in anyone before. And he comes to him for help. At his greatest need, at his darkest hour, he's slipping. He's slipping into hell. There's nothing he can do. But he comes to the King. Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And the King is reigning from the cross. And he assures this dying sinner, assuredly, I say to you, today, you will be with me in paradise. And finally, beyond the cross, that resurrection morning, and we find a broken-hearted Mary. She's weeping at the empty tomb, because as far as she's concerned, someone's stolen the body. And John tells us, Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" And she, supposing him to be the gardener, said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned and said to him, "Rabboni," which is to say, teacher. Rabboni is an Aramaic word. It's her own dialect. She's Mary Magdalene. She's from Magdala. She's from Galilee. When Jesus says to her, "Woman," and it's a respectful term, it doesn't come quite out, but "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you seeking?" There's no response from her, is there? As far as she's concerned, it's the voice of a stranger. But when he says to her, "Mary," in fact he would have said Mariam, that was her name in her dialect. As he says to her, "Mariam," spoken as only he can speak it, spoken to her heart. It's only one word, isn't it? But it's all she needs to know. It's the voice of the shepherd. "For I am gentle and lowly in heart." Not the Messiah they were expecting, but the Messiah I need. So let's wind this up then as we come to our final point. It's very simple. It's to come to Jesus. "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls." I want to speak to the Christians, Christian friend. Are you a bruised reed? What can you do with a bruised reed? Now, some reeds give you a musical note, don't they? But you can't get a musical note from a bruised reed. Some reeds, they bend in the breeze. But a bruised reed is already broken. There's nothing weaker than a bruised reed. You can't build a church, can you, out of bruised reeds? A brother or sister can't lean on a bruised reed. Maybe that's you. You feel, "Well, what good am I? I'm bruised, I'm broken. You can't do anything with me. No one can lean upon me. I can't even be tuned to sing God's praise." And Christian friend, are you a smoking flax? This morning your light has all but gone out. And in one sense, you don't even know why you're here this morning. Because you feel no warmth inside. And far from encouraging Christians, as far as you're concerned, you just give off an offensive smoke which stings their eyes. If you go for a walk in the country, it won't be long before you meet a barbed wire fence. As far as the wire has been nailed to the trunk of a tree. And over time, as the trunk has expanded, it's grown over and around the wire. And the wire has been absorbed into the tree. It's been subsumed. It's moved to the inside. It's inside the very life of the tree. You may have seen it. If you haven't, go and have a look. But Christian friend, is that you? Some time ago, a sharp wire was hammered into your life. And over the years, it's gone deeper in. And over the years, you've built up, as it were, sort of like a hard layer over it and around it. And maybe others don't see, but you know. And it's still there in your life, cutting and tearing and wounding and bruising. And maybe it's poisoning your very life. Maybe it's a child. And that child tears you up inside. Or maybe it's your spouse. And not the person you thought you were marrying. Or maybe it's a lack of a spouse. You long to be married. Or maybe it's what some church did to you. Or what some Christian did to you. Or maybe it's something that goes back a long way, goes right back to your upbringing. Or maybe it's an event, something that's happened and it's been devastating and it got hammered into your life years ago, but you've never, ever got over it. And you've replayed the tape in your mind 1,000 times and it seems to you as God forgotten me. Maybe this is God's second best for my life. Maybe if you really loved and cared for me, how could this have happened? How could this be allowed? Well, Christian friend, I need to hear, don't I? That he's gentle and lowly in heart. And a bruised reed he will not break. And a smoking flax he will not quench. If he knows that a leper needs to be touched. If he can sign to a deaf man, because how can a deaf man hear? But more than that, if he can show to a deaf man just how deep and sympathetic and understanding is his heart towards him as he sighs. If he's the one who, when he rides into Jerusalem and it's a triumphant entry, but he comes on a donkey, you feel almost his toes maybe were even brushing the ground. He's so low that even a toddler can get close. And if a dying thief who everyone else is scorning and mocking and rejecting, a guilty, helpless sinner, if he could be saved that very hour, and if a weeping, broken-hearted Mary doesn't just hear her name, but she hears it spoken as only he can speak it. Do you not think this morning that he understands you? Do you not think this morning that he knows? He understands. And he's ready to give you rest. And that's why he says to you this morning, come to me. All you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And as you approach, the touching point will be his gentleness. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. Only you must go to him. And you must put your neck under his yoke. Submit to his will and walk this sorrowful path with him. But you see, if your neck is under his yoke, he walks beside you and he carries the load with you. And as you do that, you'll find, you'll learn that he uses broken Christians. That is exactly who he uses. And that he builds churches with broken Christians. And that the blessing of God is upon broken Christians. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And those gentle hands will heal our bruising. Maybe not all at once, maybe by degrees. Maybe, Christian friend, it won't be fully healed until the great day when you're with him. And that gentle breath, he won't blow too hard. That gentle breath will raise you to a flame. Only you must go to him. If you're not a Christian this morning, hear the voice of Jesus. He says, come to me, all you labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. I can't think of a warmer, friendlier, more gentle invitation. Are you a teenager? And you retreat into your room. And you retreat into your world. And never mind others not understanding you. You don't even understand yourself. You don't know what's been going on in your life and in your body and in your mind over these years. And maybe you shout at others because they don't understand. And that's why they shout at you. And sometimes you feel everyone's shouting at you. But Jesus won't shout at you. He won't quarrel or cry out. Nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets or through the wall. He won't start an argument. Oh, he's a lion. And he'll hold you with his gaze. But he won't tear you to pieces. He won't terrify you into submission with a show of strength. Are you a teenager? Or maybe you're older than a teenager, but life has cut you up. And there are so many sadnesses and disappointments. And you feel you were made for a different life. And you're waiting to sing a song that you've never heard, but you feel that song must be there somewhere. And maybe you've gone through life and, it's left you feeling dirty, hasn't it? And guilty. And there are things that you've done and you feel ashamed and you feel you're carrying a baggage around with you. It's a burden and you can't get it off your back because what you did, you did. What's done is done. A woman had an abortion. You can't undo that, can you? And the guilt was crushing her. But she came to Jesus. And she took his yoke upon her. What a yoke is, it goes over your neck so that cattle can pull things. His yoke upon her. And the burden was lifted because he was carrying the load. If you like, she hitched up her life to him. And walking with him, he made her clean. And he pulled out the barbed wire safely. And she found rest. She found the calm of sins forgiven. I will give you rest. So maybe you're a teenager and they all shout at you, and you shout back. Maybe you've gone through life and all the bruises and knocks and all that's happened, and this morning is invitation, isn't it? It's to come. And as you come, the touching point is his gentleness. And he says, come just as you are. You say, well, I don't believe. Well, come to him and he'll give you faith to believe. That's the thing. We stand at a distance and say, I can't believe. Well, go to him and he'll give you faith. You will believe. You say, well, I can't leave my sin. I don't want to repent. I don't want to change. Well, go to him. And he'll give you repentance. Everything you need, you'll find with him. But come just as you are. And you'll find that yoke is not rough or harsh. It's lined with love. Take his yoke upon you. Walk with him. Hitch up your life to his life. Bow the knee. Surrender yourself to him. Walk all your days with Jesus and he will carry the load. And you will find that life that you've been looking for. And you'll sing that song that you've been waiting to sing. And you'll find rest for your soul. A girl was self-harming. And she was cutting herself again and again. And when she was asked why she did it, she said, because when I'm upset with myself or with others, It seems to relieve the tension. It distracted her from her problems. And the friend to whom she was talking, a Christian, he agreed. And he said, blood can solve problems. But it doesn't have to be your blood. And the cutting required has already been done. Jesus, on that cross, he shed his blood. Not to deal with our tensions, but to put things right. To put me right. To put me right with God. To die the punishing death for sins I deserve to die. So that I might enjoy everlasting life. Life that begins when you hear the voice of Jesus and come to him. Come to me, he says, to you this morning. For I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls.